This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Patsy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing. My name is Patsy Gill. I have in the studio with me today Rick Castell, who is going to be talking to us about the West Coast Players, one-act play, a festival. But first, I want to start with a fellow screenplay writer from California, Jennifer Dornbush. She's the author of one of the best technical books for writers, Forensic Speak. She's a regular seminar speaker on forensics at fiction events such as the Writer's Store, Great American Pitch Fest, and Crime Writers Weekend. Hi, Jennifer.
Hey, Patsy. How are you?
Okay, great. Well, I'm always happy to talk to a fellow Michigander. And, you know, it's funny. You can take the girl out of Michigan, but you can't take the Michigan out of a girl.
No, I miss it every day.
So do I. Now, you know, coming from Michigan, we are, you know, it's a great place to grow up. And we grow up, one of the things that we all have is a big freezer in our house and filled with body parts. But generally speaking, it's a half, it's a side of venison. Now, in your in your case, it's a little bit different. You had different kind of body parts in your house. Tell us what it was like to be the daughter of a medical examiner.
I will, yes. We actually did have venison also in our freezer, but of course, like any good Michigander. But yeah, I had a really unusual childhood. I grew up an hour north of Grand Rapids in a little town called Fremont. And my father was a medical examiner of three counties up in that area. And in order to save the county's money, because they're rural counties, he put the office of medical examiner in our house. So that meant that pretty much everything came home in terms of what the medical examiner's office had to process. He didn't actually do autopsies at our house, thank goodness. Those went to the hospital, to the morgue, but all of the records, all of the, you keep, with when you do autopsies, you keep samples of things. You keep tissue samples, you keep organ samples, blood samples, and then there's all the paperwork that goes along with it. And all of that was kept at our house in our basement in a cooler. So.
Okay. Well, it's funny to think about because, as I said, well, all of us, I think, we really had two freezers in Michigan, always filled with venison or fish.
Yes.
So, what was it like? Your father must be very proud of you.
I think so. Yes.
Yeah. that all of his lessons to you really paid off, in that you have written, really, I think it's the Bible of for anyone who's writing a screenplay or a book about that involves crime. They need to have your book because it is fantastic. Forensic Speak, it's so detailed, and yet so it's so much fun to read. You know, there's so many things you're reading and you think, oh, wow, I'm so glad I learned that. I'm so glad I learned that. So what are, you know, it's really, you have really from A to Z. And I every time I pick it up, I see that there's something I missed before and some new word that maybe I'm going to use sometime in a book. And so it's just, how did you decide to write the book? It was the...
It is. There's over 300 terms in here, and even it's funny because even though I wrote it, sometimes I'll be going through it, and I still use it for research, and it reminds me because there's so the field is so vast, and I actually never intended for this to be a published book. Ironically, I was going it was twofold. I'm a writer. I write crime fiction here in LA, and I wanted to get more. I grew up in a very forensic home, but there's, like I said, the field is so vast that I wanted to get more information and more experience. So I went through the Forensic Science Academy here in Los Angeles to help me as a writer. And when I was going through that course, one of the requirements for graduation is that you had to do a big project, like a big research project. And everybody else in the class, they're all like cops and EMTs and biologists, and they're all doing, you know, projects that have to do with that. And I asked the professor, could I do something that that really speaks to me as a writer in my field? And she said, absolutely. And so I proposed this handbook for writers that I really just meant for myself, because I've been looking out there, you know, as a writer, I'm always picking up books and resources to help me with my writing. And there's a lot of books on forensics, but I couldn't find anything this concrete that kind of had everything in one place and organized by subject.
And also so readable.
Yes, right. Yeah, I mean, there's textbooks. Like, I have forensic textbooks, and they're great because I love getting really in-depth, but they're not very accessible a lot of the time. So I was like, I want something where I can have everything in one place. So she's like, do it. That sounds a great idea. So it really just was for my own research. And then my writer friends out here who also write crime fiction and crime scripts, they were like, Jennifer, you have to publish this. We need this book. So honestly, I have one friend, she really pushed me into it. She almost pretty much like put the publisher in front of my face and said, you need to do this. You need to query this publisher. So,
well, you have a great, yeah, publisher. Michael Wiese Productions publishes it, and they are really the top in screenplay books in general. And
they are.
And they've done a great job with your book. It's it really is becoming the book that people are turning to when they're writing crime fiction.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I love them. I cannot speak highly enough about Michael Wiese. They're a great publisher.
And, you know, I was just looking, you know, through your book again, and I was thinking, what should I ask her? And I was thinking, there's one word I am just dying to use in a story. I've got to write a book maybe just so I can use it. Porology. You know,
chorology.
Now that's in your book.
Now I have to look at that.
You know, this book, what do you call, pores, you know, the, but perhaps I'm not pronouncing it right. But you know, so maybe poroscopy. Yeah, poroscopy. I have to use it somewhere. So is it fun for you when you see writers who have incorporated, you know, your work into their stories?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of times I don't get to see it because I don't get to read everybody's scripts and that. But it's I love it when I get a lot of people who email me or Facebook me, and they're asking certain questions, you know, forensic type questions, and I love that because I know that they're trying to make their work more authentic. So I love being able to help people get to that point because it gets them, it makes them more competitive.
Well, tell me, of the crime labs that you've seen, do any of them ever look like that one, you know, the most beautiful crime lab is the one in CSI Miami. Isn't that a gorgeous crime lab?
Yes, they're all beautiful, aren't they?
Yes, particularly that one. You really want to work there with that nice muted lighting. And
I know. And then there was this show, it's not on anymore, it was called Body of Proof, and it was I think in Philadelphia, and it was a medical examiner's office. It was beautiful. It had all these glass windows. It was like on the, I don't know, seventh or eighth story overlooking the city. I'm like, you'd never put bodies up on the seventh or eighth story of any building. So, but it was beautiful. I think of all the crime labs and morgues that I've been in around the country, I think everybody would be drooling to have a crime lab like CSI Miami, because they sure don't look like that.
No,
at all.
Definitely not. I've been in lots of labs too, and they never look like that.
No. Terrible fluorescent lighting, dingy walls,
and everybody looks sickly under that light. It's disgusting. Yes. It's really disgusting.
But I do have to say, Los Angeles recently redid their they call it the Crypt, the city morgue. And it is gorgeous. It is actually kind of gorgeous. It's really state of the art. I mean, it's still not anything compared to what you see on television, but they certainly spent some good time and money designing it. So
what are your favorite shows as to authenticity of their forensic information. Do you like NCIS? I like Ducky. He's one of my favorites.
You know, is it good? I always get this question, and here's the answer, because being on the other side of this, too, being a writer, where I'm writing for this type of show or these types of shows, we always go with the theory that it has to be at least possible. So if the forensic theory is at least, 1% possible, then you can use it. Because honestly, most of the time I watch these shows, I'm like, wow. Like, there's a part of it that's true and a part of it that would really happen and really does happen. And then most of it is fabricated for fiction. And that's okay. Like, it has to be. And I have a whole lecture, actually, on why when it's okay to fabricate and why it's okay to fabricate. But I think as long as writers start with that grounding principle that's true, it makes your work a little more authentic. And I know I always strive to be a little more authentic in forensics. Sometimes I find that I have to pull back a little because it's maybe not as entertaining as it needs to be, or I need to. One of the big things is time. Like, obviously, when you're watching a TV show, it's 44 minutes. The actual story is only 44 minutes on the screen. And so, you know, if a lab test takes 2 weeks or 6 weeks, you don't have that kind of time on screen. So you have to fabricate that. You have to push up, they get a results instantly. And, of course, that never happens in real life. So,
Yeah, like in NCIS, Abby solves everything in, I think, 3 minutes or less, something like that.
Yeah, or I love how they come on the scene, right away. Of course, they're dressed beautifully, in heels and suits. Like, no one would ever dress like that to a crime scene. But then, like, within 2 minutes, they have their first lead. They figured out what happened, and they're on to their first lead. And, of course, that doesn't happen either. I mean, it takes hours sometimes, or days sometimes, to process a crime scene. And you often don't know what the next lead is, or you have maybe 5 or 6 leads that you're trying to figure out. But, of course, in screen time, you got to go, the next scene has to be the next lead. So you have to get to it.
Well, last week I had the author, Barbara Harrington, who was involved in one of the first trials, well, actually the first trial, I believe, in the United States that used DNA to convict someone. So what's the latest in DNA that mystery writers and crime writers should think about?
DNA. It's interesting because that is such a fascinating science, and it's evolving so fast. Trying to think. I went to a lecture not maybe 6 months ago or so, and it was here at Cal State in LA, and they have a really, really good forensics program, master's in forensics program there, and the professor and his students there, they were master's students, and they were there right now in the process of developing and publishing this paper on a DNA, what do I say? Like a way of being able to identify DNA as to like what tissue it is. So like if it came from a liver or a heart or a kidney. And so they're doing, I think they call it rDNA. I'd have to look that up again. But it's kind of like a micro subset of DNA so that you can really pinpoint like exactly where that particular DNA sample came from. Which I find fascinating.
Fascinating. Your father has certainly lived through all of these years of development, so it must be exciting for him to know that you're right there talking to forensic experts and always being sort of on the cutting edge.
Yeah, it's fun because now that, I'm an adult, and we can talk about these kinds of things that as a kid I didn't really understand. I knew it was just kind of part of the air that I was breathing, and I knew about the world of death investigation and how it all worked, but now as an adult, you see it like with whole different eyes. So it's really
You haven't written a television series about yourself and your father. And
I have. Yes, I have. There's several versions, actually.
There are a lot of fun stories, I think, out there about. I had heard one. I don't know if it was at one of your events or somewhere that you and your sister, your father actually took you and your sister out to a plane crash. to help investigate.
That was one of the first, I guess, cases I remember doing with my father, and it was it was a plane crash, just a twin engine plane that had gone down, I think, on like a Saturday night, and he had gone out that night to investigate and such. I think there were two or three people who were killed in that crash. And then the next morning, of course, was Sunday morning, and we all go off to church. And after church, my dad's like, you know, I want to just stop by that plane crash site one more time, because when he was there on Saturday, it was dark. They had spotlights, but, you know, that only covers so much. He's like, now that it's light, I want to go in the light and see if I miss anything, see if we can find anything. So there we went, all of us out in our Sunday best, over to the plane crash site. And he said, hey, girls, you know, hop out and help me look for anything. And so we were like, we didn't really know what we were looking for, but he's like, we're just looking for little pieces of tissue, little pieces of skull. And, you know, we were like 8 and 10. We didn't really know what that looks like.
That is a wonderful opening scene. I have to see this movie. I have to take a quick break, Jennifer, and then we'll please hold on, because when I come back, I want to talk to you about your children's book, which is also so fascinating. So I'll be right back. Okay? This is WTAN 1340, Tampa Bay's Tan Talk Radio.
This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
Hi, I'm John Rakowski with Charles Ruttenberg Realty. Don't you love living here in the Tampa Bay area? Oh, I'm sorry, you don't live here yet? Well, if you already are or thinking about it, call me at my office at 727-538-9200 extension 2 for any real estate needs, including a free market analysis of your home. Your home is worth more than you can imagine. Call me today at 727-538-9200 extension 2. I'm John Rakowski.
Love a good book? Come out to Orlando for the Indie Book Fest 2015. Hang out with over 60 best-selling authors at Fanfare, where you can chat, take selfies, and get autographs. Enjoy the fun theme parties. Join us July 31st to August 2nd at the beautiful Caribe Royale Hotel in Orlando. To buy tickets, go to www.indiebookfest.com. Find your own story at the Indie Book Fest 2015.
Are you looking for the perfect gift? Going to a wedding? A special birthday? The Silver Queen is the place to go. Don't settle for the ordinary. At the Silver Queen, you will find a unique gift. Things that you won't find at the mall. From beautiful photo frames to silver and china. Guys, looking for that perfect ring? You'll find it at the Silver Queen. And don't forget their bridal registry. Located at 1350 West Bay Drive in Largo. Visit their website, silverqueen.com. They have some wonderful coupons. And when you go to the store, tell them that Patsy with a Z sent you.
Hi, it's Sawyer from the Dolphin Tale movies. Now is the perfect time to visit the world-famous Clearwater Marine Aquarium. Millions have seen us around the world, and now you can experience what we do in person. Come and reconnect with Winter and her fun-loving movie co-stars, Hope, Mavis, and yes, that crazy bird, Rufus. Immerse yourself into the world of marine life rescue with the behind-the-scenes tour. Explore the film sets, and don't miss our free boating adventure. Save time in line when you buy tickets at seawinter.com. Kids only $16.95.
This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
Hi, this is Patsy with a Z, and I'm back with Jennifer Dornbush, author of Forensic Speak. Hi, Jennifer.
Hi.
Okay, I wanted to, beside Forensic Speak, which is the Bible for anyone who's writing crime fiction, tell me about your children's book. As you know, the name of my program is Joy on Paper, And so joy is something I think a lot about. Tell us about Piccadilly Children's Ballet and about somebody who has no joy.
Yeah, well, this is a book all about joy, actually. It's actually a book about a little girl, Esmeralda, who has lost her joy. And through a series of events, she meets a wise woman from Istanbul who shows her how to get her joy back.
Well, I love Esmeralda's name. Esmeralda Van Ornery.
Munchen, yes. She's very ornery, very cantankerous.
How did you come up with this idea?
I've been writing children's stories since I was a kid. This is the first published one, but I just have always loved children's literature. I have a whole bookshelf full of children's literature. And this particular story actually sprung from a friend of mine, and she, the character of Ferda, who's the Turkish lady from Istanbul, was kind of like this really hip grandmother type who travels around the world to help kids with their problems. She actually came from a character that my friend created when she was telling her daughter stories when her daughter was quite young. And so I said, I'd love to write a little story for Haley based on this character. You know, is that okay? And my friend was like, that would be great. I would love it. So that's how it started. It started as a story for Haley.
Well, the book is first of all, it's beautifully illustrated, but also you're writing. What I like about it is the characters are so well drawn out and you don't dumb it down. You're not afraid to, you know, it's not like very simple language. It's very, very well done.
Thank you.
And I think kids actually appreciate that. They reach a point where they like a little challenge. If there's a new word, well, that's how they learn. You know, So are you continuing on with those characters, or have you written more children's books since then?
I hope to. This is actually designed to be a series of nine, based on the fruits of the spirit, joy being one of the fruits of the spirit. So I'm hoping to. I've gotten a little sidetracked, a little derailed, because my script writing has kind of taken off, so I've been focusing on that. But the plan is to keep going, and actually, kind of big news, I have a co-writer here in L.A., and she and I applied for to be creators of a children's TV program, and we're waiting to hear this week to see if we got the job. So it may be we'll be writing children's TV. We'll see.
Well, that'd be exciting. Okay.
Children's television.
So when, now I know, of course, one of the things that you do and you enjoy talking at writer seminars and helping writers. Tell me about that. And I know, are you open, right, for people to come to you for that you will read their scripts and advise them? How do you do that? Script consulting.
I'm trying to think. It's been a while since I've done a little script consulting, but yes, I'm definitely open to that. There's information on my website about it at jenniferdornbush.com. But even if people just have questions about forensics, I answer a lot of those through email or Facebook. I like to help people. I was a teacher before I became a writer, so teaching is kind of a natural natural part of what I've been doing. And I enjoy it. I like helping people improve their writing because it's kind of like giving back. I had a lot of people and still have people, mentors and friends, who helped me with my writing. So it's all circular.
And so if people send you an email with a specific question about, you know, something in their script, whether it's body fluids or, you know, DNA or perioscopy, then you'll respond back to them, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, yep. So I just want to tell people again, the site is called Jennifer Dornbush, and it's dornbush.com, Jennifer Dornbush. And I know that Jennifer is very generous with her time and her advice. So, but if you have a full script, then I think you have to talk to her about actually consulting on it, because, you know, it's like getting a good editor. When you're writing a book, you need to get an editor. And when you're writing a script, particularly if you're submitting it and you want the technical things right, then it's good to go to the expert. And you are certainly that expert.
Thank you. Yes, thank you.
So do you have any workshops coming up in the near future?
There's one in, September, first or second week of September here in L.A., Story World. They're giving two workshops that during that conference. And that's really all I have scheduled. This year has been really all about writing for me. I've done so much writing, and a film that I wrote is going to be shot starting in September in Michigan, so I'll be tied up with that for a little bit as well. So yeah, I haven't been able to schedule as much speaking this year, and I actually had to take a break from my teaching because I also teach at a university, just a screenwriting class. But yeah, this year has been all about writing, so it's been really fun.
Oh, well, that's
great. Maybe next year I'll do more speaking. We'll see.
Well, that's great if you get back to Michigan. Of course, you're what we call, I'm from the Upper Peninsula. I'm a Youper.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're a troll to me, but still a Michigander is a Michigander. So it's great that you're going to get to go home and is your script there? Is it involves crime?
You know what? It doesn't actually. I co-wrote it with a writer director who has a studio up there in Manistee, and it's actually just a family drama. So. We'll see what happens with that.
So, what's your advice for why I do this program is to motivate writers. So,
mm-hmm.
Now you, of course, have been writing since you were a child, but what motivates you? What keeps you going? Do you have a sort of something that gets you moving every day? Do you write every day, by the way?
I do. I do write every day. I am really blessed because this is my full-time job now, and it's taken a very long time to get it to that point. But I do write every day. I try to write about 4 to 5 hours a day. It's kind of the maximum I can do before the screen starts to get a little blurry. Motivation.
Besides money.
That's a really good question. Because, yeah, the money, I've did this for so many years without making a lot of money or any money, so that's really the motivation.
You know, I think one of the things that I tell people is that there is such a joy in just getting the words on paper and then looking at them and knowing that you've accomplished something. And, you know, not everybody can have a bestseller and not everyone is going to get their film made. Although you have to keep trying, but there's a pure joy of having your words actually on paper.
Mm-hmm. And it is. I love going back the next day after I've written something and rereading it and like, wow. And then, or going back, I don't know, a couple years ago, looking at the stuff I've written, it's like, wow, I can't look at all this. I can't believe it. You know, how did this all happen? and then too, I love it when my kids' book came out, I did a lot of speaking to schools and kids around the country, and that was amazing. That brought so much joy because these kids were so into the story, and they'd be asking all these questions, and they'd be telling me what they liked about this character or that character, and I don't know, it was kind of the first time my eyes were really open, like, wow, this really affects people. Wow, this is amazing.
It is. It's a powerful feeling to know that, you know, your words can really touch people's hearts, can really make them think about their life. And as in the case of the Piccadilly, ballet, it's very, very inspiring. I think that children will really go for this series because it is very, very well written and very encouraging. And I'm glad that your first book was about joy, which is so, comes back to me sort of. It's strange how that I find these circles of events. Since I started the program, you're the fourth person that I've spoken to who's from Michigan. Now, I don't know what is that we in Michigan must do something. There's something good in the air there that we have all these creative people. So, you know, I really want to thank you so much for being on today. And I know that, you know, we're going to see great things from you. And, of course, you update as you get new advances in science. I assume that the forensics speak will be updated occasionally along the along the years. But and it's nice. Do forensic scientists actually come to you now and say make suggestions for you?
Yeah, every now and then I'll hear from one. Yeah, I think they're so busy, though. They're kind of like the fiction world and the forensic world kind of don't seem to cross unless us writers go over the line there.
Well, but I think it's a wonderful book, and I really encourage everyone to, every writer should get your book. And as I said, because also your publisher is so great that they should go to you know, to see the other books that are available at Michael Wiese Productions. There are a lot of books there that are really, really helpful for writers. So I want to thank you, Jennifer. I want to thank Wiese for arranging for you to be on today. And I look forward to seeing some of your projects. And I hope the children's show works out, because I think you're an inspiration. And I know everybody in Michigan is proud of you. So, and right now, I have a whole county up in Michigan listening to us.
Yay.
Yay, Michigan. Okay.
Yay, Michigan.
So take care.
Thank you so much, Jesse.
Thank you so much, Jennifer. Bye-bye
take
now.
Care. Bye-bye.
And we'll be right back after a few messages. This is Patsy, Joy on Paper, WTAN 1340.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Love a good book? Come out to Orlando for the Indie Book Fest 2015. Hang out with over 60 best-selling authors at Fanfare, where you can chat, take selfies, and get autographs. Enjoy the fun theme parties. Join us July 31st to August 2nd at the beautiful Caribe Royale Hotel in Orlando. To buy tickets, go to www.indiebookfest.com. Find your own story at the Indie Book Fest 2015.
Charles Ruttenberg Realty proudly sponsors Joy on Paper with Patsy Gill. Charles Ruttenberg sets the standard of excellence with residential and commercial real estate transactions and can help you on your next transaction, whether that is for a second home, investment, or downsizing. Call us today at 727-538-9200 extension 2 and allow me to help you. I'm John Rakowski, the broker at Charles Ruttenberg Realty.
Are you looking for the perfect gift? Going to a wedding? A special birthday? The Silver Queen is the place to go. Don't settle for the ordinary. At the Silver Queen, you will find a unique gift. Things that you won't find at the mall. From beautiful photo frames to silver and china. Guys, looking for that perfect ring? You'll find it at the Silver Queen. And don't forget their bridal registry. Located at 1350 West Bay Drive in Largo. Visit their website, silverqueen.com. They have some wonderful coupons. And when you go to the store, tell them that Patsy with a Z sent you.
Need to get out of the house? Tired of watching reruns? Think you can spot talent? Well, come out to West Coast Players' 6th annual presentation of one-act plays. See the 11 winners selected from over 250 scripts submitted. Both matinee and evening performances run July 3rd through July 5th and July 10th through July 12th. Conveniently located on US 19, you will enjoy watching the plays presented by the talented West Coast Players. For tickets, go to www.wcplayers.org or type in West Coast Players One Act Plays.
Are you looking for some great restaurants? For some great wines? Where are the great chefs? Just listen to Dine Out Radio, heard every Wednesday on the Tantalk Radio Network. 12 to 1 p.m. We'll tell you where all the great events are. We'll have Food and Wine magazine and Bon Appetit magazine. We'll have their editors and writers on each month. And maybe we'll throw in a couple surprises. Check out the website, diningoutradio.com.
My bridge is all. This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
This is Patsy with a Z, and I'm back with Rick Castell, producer of the One Act Plays Festival, put on by the West Coast Players. Hi, Rick.
Hi, Patty. Patsy.
Okay. Tell us, well, I just found out, Rick just mentioned that he's also lived in Southfield, Michigan for many years. It's becoming like a Michigan mafia here. Every time I turn around, I'm running into somebody from Michigan. So tell us about this exciting event. You know, when I first heard about the One Act Plays Festival a few months ago, before when people were submitting, I encouraged everybody to, you know, try it. This is a wonderful first start if you're just, you know, getting into the writing field, or, you know, if you haven't done anything before. The One Act Plays Festival is a great chance. And what's happened with this? How has this developed?
You're exactly right in terms of encouraging new people. And the One Act Plays Festival is kind of geared to doing the same thing, not only for writers, but for actors, directors, anybody who would like to do anything behind the stage. There's lots of people that I talk to from time to time, and they say, I'd love to act, but I couldn't memorize all of those lines that are in a script for a full-length play. And I said, well, the One Act Plays Festival is a perfect opportunity for someone who's never done this, would like to try their hand at it. So you're talking about 10, 12 pages, a few less. And it gives people an opportunity, allows new people to come in, and with writers as well. One of the plays that won second place in the audience favorite last year was submitted by someone who has very little experience doing it. He's always wanted to do this. He sent one in, and bingo, it was selected. And at the end of each of our performances, I'm just jumping ahead a little bit, we include a ballot in the program for all the patrons who come in. And then we ask them to select their first, second, and third favorite plays, and then we calculate at the end of the show. And those three winning authors sharing a cash award, which I'll describe to you in just a minute. But yes, it does encourage new people from all aspects of what we do to participate
to get in
and
there
get
and
some
do
exposure,
exactly.
Something that you've never done before.
That's fantastic.
I mean, you may want to write a play, but my goodness, how long is it going to take to write a full three-act play? But here's a 10 pages, 12 pages. Lots of people want to do that, makes it easy, and we encourage people to do that.
Absolutely. Now, this is the sixth annual one.
Yes, this is the sixth year that West Coast Players has been doing this. I've been involved for the last 4 years. This is my fourth endeavor with them.
And you're producing and directing some of them.
No, I'm not directing. No? I have directed a play in the past. I am a director as well. I'm first an actor and have been for about 10 years. I just discovered this as an extra career after I retired from real life and earning a living. I have mostly acting. I've done some directing, and I got into producing this with another friend of mine, it would have been 3 years ago, who was asked by West Coast Players to produce the One Act Plays Festival. And he said he didn't want to do it because it's too much work. And I said, well, I'll help you. And then we did it together, and it just kind of involved. The second year, he left the area and kind of left it up to me. And so it just keeps growing and growing.
So how many submissions did you have this year?
This year, we had 255 plays submitted.
Wow.
The first year I did this, we had 60 or 70. And we used to ask people to, based upon the first two that someone else had done this, we just ask them to mail in their scripts to our post office box. Well, I decided last year that it might be more efficient to do it electronically. So we asked them to submit either a document or a PDF form to an email address that we created. And then I could just forward those plays to the people on the play reading committee instead of having them come into the theater to read them. And it doubled the number of plays from the year before. Last year we got 137. And as we continue to expand, this year we had 255 submissions.
From all over the world,
I hear. Came from all over the world. What happens is the West Coast Players has their distribution. I think it's about 2,000 people. I have several hundred on my own personal distribution list. And then I guess these get recirculated to some. Many people have their own distribution list. I understand there are some websites. I don't know the details of it, but I understand there are some.
Oh, yes, who list
for all of these solicitations. And my estimation is that tens of thousands of people have seen this because our submissions came from 25 states and the District of Columbia, two from London, one from New Zealand, one from Germany, and one from Iran.
Wow.
So we are truly have become an international attraction. And so we're very excited. It just keeps growing and growing every year.
So it's a big job to sort of winnow it down. And what happens? You have the readers, and how many plays were selected?
Here's the process by which we do that. Yeah. We give the authors a 2 or 3 month period to submit, and as they come in, they are all forwarded to the play reading committee. This year we had 18 people on the committee, officially 18. Probably all didn't read every single play, but a good core of them read every one of the plays. They filled out a worksheet that was created by someone as to their comments on each of the plays. And then we have a meeting in April to sit down with these people, and we narrow it based upon all these comments to about 60 plays. We have a meeting. We spend about 3 hours. Now we get it down to 50 and down to 40 and down to 30. Just keep eliminating in all these discussions. And with a wide range of people who are interested, we get a pretty broad assortment of things that are of interest. And the more people we have on the committee, the wider variety of opinions we have about what to select. So we usually select 10. There was another short one that everybody seemed to like, so we put that one in. Now we have 11. So that's the process. It starts in January.
Range. I mean, there's comedies.
They're mostly comedies. Audiences prefer that most. This year we have a couple of dramas. We have done dramas in the past, but there's a couple or three dramas this time, and a romantic comedy about two 70-something-year-olds. Romance, a little science fiction type of thing. We try to make some variety in there. People say to me every once in a while, I don't know if I want to go to the theater. What happens if I don't like the play, a regular full-length play? Well, that does happen. But I said with the one-act plays, if you come in and you don't like the first one, just sit tight. There'll be 10 more.
Yeah, well, some of the titles are intriguing, like Elvis is Dead.
Mm-hmm.
And that's coming from a writer in Calgary.
That's correct. That's kind of a little fantasy of two people who from the future are coming back to a library to retrieve a book because in the future where they live, there are no more books. It's all done digitally, electronically. Uh-huh. So they're coming back to trying to get some books to bring back to the future so that people could see what books actually were.
And so when you select these people. Once you've selected the plays, you have auditions for the actors?
Okay, the next step after the plays have been selected is the following week after that, we solicit directors. We've been sending emails out periodically that on such and such a date, we will have all the scripts that have been selected, 3 or 4 copies of each one, come to the theater if you're interested in directing. And again, first-time directors are welcome, and we've had several of those in the past. People who have acted for some period of time and said, you know, I saw something that I didn't like the way it was done. I think I could do it better. So I said, welcome, come on in, and we can get you directed. And if we have enough people, we might take someone who is new, has never directed before, and have them pair up with an experienced director have them act as like an assistant director, and they get a chance to learn a little bit as well. So that happens the week after the plays are selected. Then the directors have a chance to read the plays, get some ideas to what they're doing, and the following weekend, and this year it would be the first 2 days in May, 2nd and 3rd, we have auditions. So instead of having auditions, though, for one play, as most theaters, most productions are, we have auditions for 11 plays.
So like an open call.
It's like an open call, right? And we have each of the directors stand up there, introduce themselves, and talk for 30 seconds about their play. Then we have all the auditionees standing on the stage, one at a time, spending 30 seconds telling them about themselves so the directors can see who those people and then make their notes. And then one at a time, the directors call people up that they think they want to read for it, just like a regular audition. It's just that there's a lot of it, that's all.
That's fantastic. It sounds exciting.
It's fun. It's exciting. We do this on a Sunday night and a Monday night. And then at the end of the auditions on Monday night, the directors all sit around and say, okay, well, we had 40 people came to audition. Who wants whom? And there's a little bit of, well, I want this one. No, but I want that one. Okay, I'll give you this one. I get this like a little horse trading between the directors.
Yeah,
to see
it's
who
like
gets.
Louis B. Mayer is out there.
Well, it is. And it isn't meant to sound anything other than the directors trying to select the people that they best feel can portray the roles that they want as they see it. So it always ends up being just a tremendous amount of fun.
It sounds like it. Tell me, the West Coast Players, it's a permanent organization.
Oh, yes.
They have shows all year round.
Oh, yes, yes.
So tell us a little bit about the background.
Okay, West Coast Players is a 501c3 nonprofit. They started many, many years ago. The current building that we're in is it's about 5 or 6 years old that we rent some space. There's U.S. 19 in Drew Street is... There's a Toyota dealership right there. And right behind that are some rows of little shops and offices. Really hard to find with your GPS, but on our website we'll tell you how to do it. So they rent a couple of spaces there, and we've remodeled it and built a stage and built an office and built green rooms and everything. So it's a functioning theater. We have seats for about 95 people. It's what we call a little black box theater. And they do 7 main stage productions, which run generally 3 weekends every year. They are available for groups that want to come in maybe just for an evening. They've had stand-up comedy groups have come in. Musical groups will come in and just put on 1 or 2 nights in between their regular season. And then the One Act Plays Festival, it was started 6 years ago as just a little filler for the summertime. And like now it's grown into 2 weekends with 7 performances. So it just continues. So, yes, and you can buy an annual membership, season tickets through the website, and gives you tickets for all 7 plays or 6 plays. There are a couple of choices there. But they do it year-round.
Now, the tickets for this event, for the One Act Plays Festival, are available, and people should go to the website.
Yes.
What's the name of the website?
It's www.wcplayers.org. And you can click, and you'll see links there to buy tickets. You then pick the show that you want. Sometimes they will put future shows available as well. Mm-hmm. You click on the show, then it brings up all of the different performance dates. They click on that. Brings them to a seating chart. They pick their seats, check out.
And it's nice. There are some matinee shows, which... Yes.
This year, because of conflicts with the future after the show, normally we do this the 2nd and 3rd weekends in July. We kind of had to move it up a week to encompass the 4th of July weekend. So we decided that instead of depriving everybody of their love to go see fireworks, the 4th of July will be a matinee.
Good.
Okay, so we got a Friday night. That's what we open this Friday. 2 matinees, Saturday and Sunday. The following weekend, then we have a Friday night. 2 shows on Saturday, matinee and evening, and the final show Sunday.
With so many people, you know, even though it's daylight until very late, still a lot of people
there
like to do shows
in the matinees. There are a lot of people who like the matinees. They don't like to drive at night, and so there's actually 3 evening performances and 4 matinees this year.
Oh, well, that's great.
So we're very excited, everybody. We had our tech week opened Sunday night. And that's what we're doing right now. So it's kind of frantic, everybody in and out of the theater with the lights, the sound, all of the stuff that goes with it. If anybody is familiar with how that works, just multiply that by 11.
Well, there is nothing as much fun as the theater. And live theater is so thrilling. And Of course, we are lucky in this area. We have so many talented people.
Yes, we do.
It's amazing. It's, you know, it's a wonderful, wonderful opportunity. So I encourage everyone to really get out there and get some tickets and see these wonderful.
Come on and see us. It's a lot of fun. Just add one thing that in terms of live theater, some people do film, and I've been involved in a little bit of that. But the thing about live theater is that the response is instantaneous. If you tell a funny joke or if you make somebody cry, you know that right away. If you mess up a line, you don't do it well, you know that right away. But the gratification when you do something good, you get that feedback immediately, and that's really a good feeling being on
stage.
And I
think this audience participation, being able to vote, it's exciting to have this kind of audience participation. And I know that the writers must be so excited about
it.
This is an exciting event for them. And so, Rick, I want to thank you so much for coming to see us today. And I think next year I'm have to sign up, and I've always wanted to direct. Well, everybody in my family says I'm a little bit bossy, which I think is a great attribute for a director.
Well, that's what directors are known for, right?
You know, my boys, I think, thought, you know, I was a little bit of a drill sergeant when I used to wake them up in the mornings. So perhaps next year I'm going to be a director for
it. Well, we look forward to it. I don't know if I'll be involved next year, but I've been doing it for four years, so they kind of what I'm doing so far. I thank you for allowing me to come here and talk about it, and we hope everybody will come and see it. It's a lot of fun.
Okay, thank you so much, Rick. So this is Patsy with a Z, and I'm wishing everybody a great week and a happy and safe 4th of July weekend. And do go and to the West Coast Players website and get tickets and have a fun 2 weekends in a row that you can take part in something that's really exciting. Because as I always say, that one of the joys in life is seeing your words on paper. So maybe you will be inspired, and next year you will submit a one-act play, and then you will be able to be at the premiere. And it's so exciting. So enjoy your week, and thank you so much for joining me. And join me next Tuesday. I have a very special guest next Tuesday. You don't want to miss this show. It's unbelievable. And meanwhile, remember, don't let anyone steal your joy. Have a lot of fun this week. Treasure your joy and share it. Bye-bye.